to thrilling tales of adventure. I'm Mardell, reading Black Bartleby's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 38, Concerning the Dead Man Humphrey, and How I Saw a Vision in the Moonlight. My next memory was of sun and a dance of leafy shadows on the wall of the cave, the which shadows held my attention so that I had no will to look otherwhere, for these were merry shadows that leapt in sportive gambols, that danced and swayed, pleasing me mightily. And as I watched these antic shadows, I could hear the pleasant murmur of the little rill without the cave, that bubbled with sweet soft noises, like small babbling voices, and break ever and anon into elfin laughter, and presently, mingled with this pretty babblement, I seemed to hear a whisper. Martin, dear Martin. And now I saw my lady plunge to death from the rock, and started up, filling the place with my lamentations, until for very weakness I lay hushed, and heard again the soft rippling of the brook, and therewith her voice, very sweet and faint and far away. Martin, dear Martin, I remember a season of blackness, in which dim, seen, evil things menaced me, and a horror of dreams wherein I, fettered and fast-bound, must watch my sweet lady struggle, weeping in the arms of vile rogues, whiles I strove desperately to break my bonds, and finding this vain, fell to raging madness, and dashed myself hither and thither to slay myself and end my torment. Or axe in hand amid smoke and flame, I fell upon her murderers. Then would I smite down the man Humphrey, only for him to rise to be smitten again and yet again, nodding shattered head and flapping nerveless arms in derision of me, until, knowing I might never slay him, he being already dead, I turned to flee, but with him ever behind me, and in my ears his sobbing cry of death for all of us, death. And feeling his hands on me, I would fall to desperate struggle until the blackness closed over me again, thick and stifling like a sea. And behind all these horrors was a haunting knowledge that I was going mad, that this man Humphrey was waiting for me out beyond surf, beckoning to me with flapping arms, and had cast on me a spell whereby, as my brain shriveled to madness, my body was shriveling and changing into that of Black Bartleby. Always I knew that Humphrey waited me beyond the reef, watchful for my coming, and growing ever more querulous and eager as the spell wrought on me, so that he began to call to me in strange sobbing voice, hailing me by my new name. Bartleby, ahoy! Black Bartleby, Bartleby, ho! Come your ways to Humphrey, that being dead can die no more, and knowing all doth know you, for Bartleby crept back from hell. So come, Bartleby, come and be as I am, and there's others here, proper lads as once ye too, dead men all, by the rope, by the knife, by the bullet, oh ho! There be two at the fore, at the main be three more dead men that swing all over row. Here's fine dainty meat for the fishes to eat, Black Bartleby, Bartleby, ho! There's a fine Spanish dame, Joanna's her name, must follow wherever ye go, till your black heart shall feel your own cursed steel. Black Bartleby, Bartleby, ho! And I, hearkening to this awful sobbing voice, sweating and shivering in the dark, knew that since I was indeed Black Bartleby, sooner or later I must go. Thus it befell that of a sudden I found myself, dazzled by a fierce sun, supporting me against a rock, and my breath coming in great gasps. And in a while, my eyes growing stronger, I stared away to the reef, where this man Humphrey waited me with his dead men all, and since I must needs go there, I wept, because it was so far off. Now as I stood grieving thus, I saw one stand below me on deliverance, looking also towards the reef, a woman tall and very stately, and habited in gown of rich satin and embroidery, caught in at slender waist with golden girdle, and about her head a scarf of lace. And this woman stood with bowed head and hands tight clasped, as one that grieved also. Suddenly she raised her head and lifted folded hands to the cloudless heaven in passionate supplication. And beholding her face, I knew her for the poor Spanish lady, imploring just heaven for vengeance on me that had been her undoing, and uttering a great cry, I sank on my knees. Mercy, mercy, O God, mercy, let me not be mad. Yet even as I prayed, I knew that madness was upon me, ere I plunged again into the dreadful dark. But God, whose mercy is infinite, hearkened to my distressful cry, for in a while he brought me up from that black abyss and showed me two marvels, the one which filled me with wonder and a sudden passionate hope. The first was the bandage that swathed my thigh, and this of itself enough to set my poor wits in a maze of speculation. For this bandage was of linen, very fine and delicate, such as I knew was not to be found upon the whole island. Yet here it was, bound about my hurt, plain and manifest, and yet set there by hands well skilled in such kindly work. And my second wonder was a silver beaker or ewer, very artfully wrought, and all chased and embossed with designs of fruit and flower, and of a rare craftsmanship, and this jug set within my reach and half full of milk. The better to behold this, I raised myself, and with infinite labor. But now and suddenly she was before me again, this poor Spanish lady I had slain upon a time, wherefore I blenched and shrank from her coming. But she, falling upon her knees, sought to clasp me in her arms, crying words I heeded not, as maugre my weakness, I strove wildly to hold her off. "I'm Bartlemy that killed you," says I. "I'm Black Bartlemy. They know out yonder beyond the reef. Hearken, you shall hear how they hail me." "Oh, kind God, teach me how I may win him back to knowledge." So crying, this Spanish lady of a sudden unpinned her hair and shook its glossy ripples all about her. "Look, Martin," cries she, "don't you know me? Oh, don't you know me now? I am Joan come back to you." "No," says I, "no. Tomorrow's is dead and lost. I saw her die." "Then who am I, Martin? The Spanish lady, or one of the ghosts do haunt me." But now her hands were clasping mine, her soft hair all about me as she stooped. And feeling these hands so warm and vital, so quick and strong with life, I began to tremble and strove against her no longer. And so she stooped above me that I might feel her sweet breath on fevered cheek and brow. "'Tis your Damaris, Martin," says she, her tears falling fast. "'Tis your comrade hath come back to comfort you." Now seeing how I stared all trembling and amazed, she set her arms about me and drawing me to her bosom clasped me there. And my head pillowed thus, I fell a-weeping. But these were tears of joy and thankness beyond all words. "Oh, Damaris," quoth I at last, "if this be death, I care not, since I have seen thee again." "Why, Martin," says she, weeping with me, "art indeed so glad to find thy poor comrade." And thus knowing myself forgiven, a great joy sang within me. Please join me next week for another exciting chapter of Black Bartlemy's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.